Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome this Christmas season. I'm Tracy McClure. Today, the Church celebrates the Feast of the Epiphany, the pilgrimage to Bethlehem of the three wise men come to revere the Christ child. Looking back at the story recounted in Matthew, we begin the program with Jill Bevilacqua's Christmas radio drama, Daniel's Gift, introduced by Sean Patrick Lovett. Enjoy.
This is a story of Christmas, or rather, a story of the Epiphany. The Gospel of St. Matthew tells us that when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem saying, "Where is he who has been born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him." We don't know exactly where the wise men, or kings, as they're sometimes called, came from. It's thought to be Persia, where the followers of Zarathustra worshipped one god, like the Jews. But tradition has placed them in the three parts of the known world at that time. Tradition has made them descendants of the sons of Noah, Cam, Shem, and Japhet. This idea is important for one reason. All races were called symbolically to Bethlehem because all were redeemed by the Messiah without distinction of origin or discrimination of color. Various names have been given to the wise men. The most popular are those given by St. Bede, the English monk of the 7th century. Bede said Melchior was white-skinned, Gaspar was red-skinned, and Balthazar black-skinned. The wise men brought gifts to the newborn Messiah: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold, the king of metals. Frankincense, the perfume to be burnt in the presence of the most important people. And myrrh, the most fragrant of ointments for embalming the dead. Christian tradition gave these gifts a symbolic value: the gold representing the kingship of Jesus, the frankincense, the divinity of Jesus, and the myrrh, the humanity of Jesus, since he would die and have to be buried and his body embalmed. And now to our story. Since one king brought myrrh, and this is to be found in Ethiopia, we'd like to imagine that Balthazar was African. And since each king or wise man must have had a slave or a page to attend him, we've imagined a young boy called Daniel, who, carrying his flute, travels the long journey to Bethlehem and back with his beloved master. The flute provides the musical theme for our story and is itself a kind of symbol. For each time you hear the flute, we'd like you to imagine that the star has appeared again.
Well, Daniel, your flute sounds weary tonight. I expect you're tired, lad. It's been a long journey. But never mind. Look, up there on the hill, that's Jerusalem. That's where we'll be stopping. That's where we'll find the answer to what we're looking for. God willing, it'll be the truth this time. The truth and the life. But the way. The way. Who knows? Come, Daniel, we must get a move on. Our companions are ahead of us. Set up that old camel.
Yes, master. Come on, get along there. Hurry, old brute.
Master, there it is. Our star.
The star. The star.
Thank you.
This is good. I was hungry. We couldn't stop to eat today. My master was so anxious to go to Jerusalem and see the king. Is he a good master, your Herod? Treat you well?
Oh, he has his good days, I suppose. I don't see much of him here in the kitchen. But the cooks, well, I wouldn't like to be in their shoes. If he doesn't like something they've prepared. And what about you?
My master? Well, he's a strange man, but he knows everything. He reads books, studies the sky. He doesn't talk much to other folks in our village. Not like most chiefs. But if anyone wants advice or help, they go to him. He says this star is the greatest thing that has ever happened on this earth.
No, really? A star?
Yes. Mind you, he gets gloomy sometimes. Stands for hours looking at the sky. Doesn't talk at all. Then I wonder how I can cheer him up.
So what you do?
I play my flute.
Is that it there? Give us a tune. Go on.
Well, it's rather special flute. And somehow, since I've been on this journey, I find I play the same tune all the time. Well, maybe you think I'm silly, but it's the star.
The star?
Yes, the star. I must run. Our camel hasn't been fed yet. He's an old crossbatch. See you later.
Oh, well, he's a funny kid. Running off like that and leaving a full plate. If you ask me, he's got that star on the brain. Oh, well, I'd better get on. Or they'll find me still at it when they need the dishes, and then I'll be the one who'll be seeing stars.
Welcome, good strangers. Welcome to Jerusalem. Welcome to my palace. I hope you will enjoy your stay here. We have quite a lively city. Dancing, drinking. There are sights to see, things to do. Girls.
Great King, we appreciate your interest, but we have come to Jerusalem with a more serious purpose. A very serious purpose indeed.
Tell me more. I'm fascinated.
Great Herod, you know many things, and we have come to you in the hopes that you will be able to tell us something.
I shall do all in my power to answer your questions.
There is only one question. Where is he who is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and have come to worship him.
King of the Jews.
Sirs, I shall see you very shortly when you have refreshed yourselves. My servants will attend to your needs. Please excuse me.
King of the Jews.
When Herod heard what the wise men were seeking, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler, who will govern my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I too may come and worship him."
You see, I have managed to answer your question, good sirs. A little thought and meditation, and I had the answer. And now I will bid you good journey. Oh, but wait! Who is that you have with you? A boy? And how did you come to be at the court of King Herod?
He wished to see you, sire, and pay you homage. He had heard much about you.
An intelligent boy. Well, we have lived to see a great event, child. Eh?
Speak up, boy. King Harold is addressing you. Thank him for his kindness in receiving you.
Child, dear child, how I love children, their innocence. I would have my palace filled with children, all playing happily. Would you like to stay with me, child, in my palace? Wait on me at table, have beautiful, rich clothes to wear.
Oh, no, sire. I can't. I belong to my master.
Your master? Oh, yes, of course. Well, what's this? A flute? Come, play for me. I love to hear music. It helps me to forget.
To forget? Forget what, sire?
Why, nothing, child. Now, off you go to find your newborn king, your new master. I shall be seeing you on your return. A palace full of innocence. What a marvellous idea!
A strange man, this Herod. But let's be away, or night will surprise us on the highway. Daniel, what's the matter with you? You look like death. Come, let's have a tune to help us on our way.
Master, I can't. I don't know why. It's the star, I think.
The star?
Yes, it's disappeared. Ever since we came in here.
There, Daniel, don't worry. It'll come back, you'll see. As soon as we're out of here, on the road, it'll come back.
Will it? I don't know. I feel, since we came in here, something's happened. I feel we lost it.
Nonsense. Superstition. What are you looking so frightened for?
I don't know, Master. It's that man. He scares me. I don't believe he wants to see the Messiah. I don't believe he cares about the star. He gives me the shivers.
Look! Over there, the star. There you are, child, I told you. Come on now, let's have some music. You mustn't let us down now.
And so, as the Gospels recount, the three wise men went their way. And lo, the star which they had seen in the east went before them, till it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their country by another way. And there the gospel story ends. But we shall follow Daniel just a little further before he too disappears out of sight, like the star. When Daniel and his master and the other two wise men with their pages reached the simple dwelling where the Holy Family had found lodging, after the crowds had departed, Daniel stayed on the edge of the group. He was shy. Daniel knelt down at the doorway and gazed at the babe. And when the wise men moved forward, each in turn to offer their treasures, he suddenly felt his flute in the pocket of his tunic.
Oh, no.
Well, why not?
And as the wise men bowed low to Christ made man, Daniel suddenly rushed forward and laid his flute at the feet of the babe. And as he did, he looked up at its mother, and she smiled at him. A wonderful, grateful smile. But he must hurry now. He'd be left behind. The wise men had already gone out and were calling for their servants. There, his master was calling him.
Ah, there you are. I was beginning to wonder if you'd taken up King Herod's offer after all.
Oh, no, sir. I'd never do that. And I want to go home. I've such a lot to tell them in the village.
Well, boy, we've seen the Messiah. We have seen our salvation. Come, let's have a tune. It's time we saddled our camel. Where's your flute?
I haven't got it. I left it for the baby. I thought you wouldn't need it anymore. Now.
Oh. You're right, child. You're right. No, we won't need it anymore. We have a music in our hearts that will take us safely home. You're a wise boy, Daniel. You'll make a good chief.
The baby gave me his gift, too.
Well, how do we translate an event that happened 2,000 years ago into our frenetic modern day? Father Bernard O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches, sat down with me and an unforgettable Ella Fitzgerald for a fireside chat.
We three kings of Orient are
Epiphany literally means manifestation, a showing forth of God's revelation and truth. And so the various kinds of epiphanies known in biblical history and church history, especially during the time of Jesus, were what was often celebrated. Only a little later did we start celebrating the visit of these interesting strangers from what it was probably present-day Persia. And it becomes very interesting to see what their mission was, what they was said about them. And because of their total self-giving and embarking on a difficult pilgrimage to find divine truth.
We spoke earlier in December about Christmas, December 25th, as being Christmas Day when one exchanges presents with the family and so on. Mm-hmm. But here in Italy, that was a practice, at least until just a few years ago, that was done on January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany.
Well, of course, in certain parts of the Eastern churches, what we call Epiphany is actually their Christmas, January 6th, depending on whether that their areas follow the Julian calendar or we follow the Gregorian calendar. So what you're seeing here is a little bit of a mixture of two calendar systems, both of which coexisted for long periods in the history of Italy, and both of which have left their mark. So it's very appropriate that on January 6th, those who follow the Gregorian calendar are still attentive that we're in the Christmas season, and in fact, Christmas Day for the Easterns. So let's keep within the Christmas season in the Gregorian tradition and introduce at least an aspect of Christmas, namely the visitation of the Magi.
I celebrate with my children both Christmas Day and the Epiphany in a smaller way. And with my children on Christmas Day, I say it's baby Jesus' birthday today. And instead of receiving so many presents from Santa Claus that we forget about baby Jesus' birthday, it's also time to give him something. And what can we give him is perhaps of ourselves. And at the same time, on the Epiphany, we remember the wise men bearing gifts to the Christ child.
I think this is a wonderful approach. I very strongly encourage it. And I'm happy to tell you, Tracy, that there are quite a number of families which do see the Christmas gift of the season in a multiple number of phases. Imagine a coin with two sides. Well, the Nativity is one side, the Epiphany is another side. They're both giving us different aspects of the same message of the good news come to earth.
Born a king on Bethlehem's plain, gold I bring to crown him again, king forever, ceasing never over us all to reign.
One of the things that I would recommend you may want to encourage as a family custom, take your children on a little walk. Take them around the area and show them different scenes that are important to the culture, the history of the area, but also show them scenes that are very important for the history of their church tradition here. And say, just as when we went out walking, we went in search of things that are important to us and to our family and to our history. Well, the Magi went on a search too. They took a walk, so to speak. They wanted to know what was most significant in their world, and they believed that to be the Messiah, the Christ figure, the person of Jesus, whom we celebrate, of course, on December 25th. But the fact of their search and their sacrifice to search, we can symbolize that with children. We can symbolize it with adults, too.
It's rather a sad moment, the Epiphany, because it's the time also that we start bringing down the nativity scenes and we start bringing down the Christmas tree and so on. But you're right. Usually before Christmas, I take my kids around to the various churches in my neighborhood. And here in Italy, many of the creche scenes, the nativity scenes in these old churches are hundreds of years old.
Exactly.
And they're each one is so individual, so charming, so beautiful. They're lit up at night and you have the water
wonderful
running and the little fire is going. They are a very special pilgrimage for my children ahead of Christmas. So it is rather sad at the Epiphany to look back on these things and know that we have to wait another year.
I think it's very unfortunate. You'll notice that the creche in St. Peter's Square and the Christmas trimmings, as it were, within the Vatican itself, tend to stay up until much, much later, into February. But certainly all through Christian history, we've known of the 12 days of Christmas. This was not 12 days before Christmas, but 12 days beginning on the 25th, and which took in major events and wonderful reminders, faith-wise, of what the Nativity really means, how it was spread out, but certainly the beginning of something, and by no means culminating on the 6th. That's unfortunate, because we're so desperate to get on to the next commercial enterprise. Oh, my heavens, we have Easter bunnies to contend with and various things, Valentines and whatever have you. So let's get away Christmas then and get on to that. That's an example of the rather ruinous influence of excessive commercialization in our culture.
Tell me a little bit more about the figures of these wise men. Each one represented a different part of, practically, of the world, didn't they?
Well, there is so much legend and so much uncertainty of the facts that are at the basis of the legend. We have, for example, John and Mark's Gospel and Luke's Gospel being silent on any mention of the Magi. And certainly the early fathers of the church did not delve in this theme at all. So we're seeing that in certain times in our history, we begin to sort through other kinds of legends, not necessarily historically proven, but certainly present in one gospel, that surround who these figures were. We truly don't know. We have names that have come down to us, Gaspar, Melchior, Balthasar. We have a legend, especially in Cologne in Germany, that at least one of them, of the three interred in that cathedral, was probably from Africa. But the fact is, we don't know with certainty. We do know that the name Magi probably comes from a term that would relate them to Persia, to that area of the world, and that very likely they belong to a kind of priestly class, a priest-slash-teacher class that was known among the Medes. And so they surface in terms of Persia and in terms of what is called Parthia. And very likely there's the connection. There is no substantial tradition that they were kings. And this is something, again, that has filtered through various strands of legend, but which there it's relatively insubstantial, and most scholars say that that is not a consistent tradition. But the fact that they are wise people, of a possibly three in number, we don't know. Some traditions have them up to 12. Some say they came from Arabia, and the legends all mix and somehow enmesh together in various levels. But the bottom line is, here were people concerned to follow carefully the science that they knew, the stars. These were persons who were aware of the messianic prophecies in Israel. These were persons who were determined to sacrifice everything and take any risk to pursue truth. These were persons who were willing to put their lives at stake, e.g. their encounter with King Herod, who was certainly ready to manipulate and use them. These were people who were open to the Spirit, who were led by the Spirit to that King Christ, who is the fulfillment of all holiness in spirit.
You said they were willing to risk their lives for this pilgrimage to the Christ child. What was their relationship with Herod, and what do we know about this relationship through the Bible?
Well, we're taught, at least from the meager biblical evidence, that where the Magi were glad to pursue the Christ figure, those in Israel, Romans and Jews alike in some cases, were sad about the thought of a Messiah. They didn't want a competitor. They didn't want to be dethroned, as it were, of their power and influence. So we see two very contrasting sets of motives. And wherever you have that strong a clash in motive, eventually it's just a short step to a clash in arms. It's going to lead to violence. So we're told that the Magi very politely maneuvered around Herod, being told in a dream to take another route back to their homeland. And it's interesting that the notion of dream at that time in history was interpreted as a vehicle in which God might communicate something other than appearing visibly and giving you actual words. So there was a great respect for the psychology of the day as well as the science of the day, and a willingness that if they were so told, so informed, so instructed, they would be obedient. And that's a lesson also for us. You know, Tracy, it's very interesting that not only were the motives of Herod and his court and the Magi and their entourage very, very different, but the outcome was also different. We see that Herod, when frustrated, realizing that, yes, very likely this Messiah has been born and those Magi tricked me, immediately set out upon a strategy which involved bloodshed, the slaughter of the holy innocents. There's many, many wonderful aspects of this whole story of the Magi, not only with regard to Herod, but by the fact that even the star which led them, and this is a wonderful symbol, tells us that we have an obligation to be as that star and to lead others to the place where Jesus stays.
And that brings our program to a close today. Thank you for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.